Hello and welcome to the Greg Hughes Podcast, a new episode coming up for you very shortly. Just want to remind you that the podcast is researched and produced by Caroline Orr. If you have any feedback or any guest suggestions, please feel free to email her, CarolineOrr@HighlandRadio.com. And if you're enjoying the Greg Hughes Podcast, please give us a positive rating, leave a comment, like, subscribe, tell your friends, share on your social media. It all helps. Okay, here's the latest episode. Okay, we're very pleased to welcome on to the Greg Hughes Podcast today our guest all the way from Ranafast. It is Niall McCarkey. Thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the pod.
And it's a real pleasure that you got my name right.
Great
now.
Stuff. Okay. Is that something you become used to, though?
Well, how will I put it? The one I have not got used to yet is that sometimes people ask, what's the English for that?
Okay. Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think, you know, there are levels. That's a wee bit disrespectful, to say the least, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, I can go in harder on that. It is fully disrespectful.
You don't say it to anybody with a Chinese name.
No, what's the anglicised version of that? Yeah. Okay, you're passionate about the Irish language, obviously.
Totally, yes. Very passionate. I learned English at school. And I think, I've been very fortunate that I spoke Irish. And it has, in a way, in an indirect way, it has kept me in employment for most of my life.
And through that, though, it's allowed you to be a promoter of the language as well, too.
I hope so. I think, I've done quite a bit for the language that I, maybe not as much as I would have liked to. I feel very important and very passionate about.
I think sometimes too, the greatest advocacy you can do be an ambassador for it is actually just using it not necessarily trying to educate. It's almost like passive education, if you know what I mean.
Well, yeah. And a lot of, I just saw something on a newspaper or somewhere lately where somebody was talking about their time at the Irish college, we'll say. And one of the things that we take for granted that we don't, she was talking about how she was stunned to hear the family talking in Irish. You know, it all of a sudden, it was a living language. It wasn't an exam language anymore. And, we forget about little things like that.
Actually, just as a curiosity, because you are obviously very strongly associated with TG Cahir, and we'll get into that. I wonder how important that station has been alongside the likes of Radio na Gaeltachta in keeping the language going, making it feel more relevant, you know, even growing the language. Because TG Cahir has done it very well. It's a very well-run outfit. They do things right and they do things well. How important do you think it's been?
I think it's of huge importance. Well, especially, and I would differentiate a little bit here. I think in a way, Irish has thrived in the rest of the country, we'll say. Mm. And as far as the Gaeltacht is concerned, we're still a little bit slow. And I'm disappointed, we'll say, with the younger people of the Gaeltacht. They prefer to speak English most of the time.
Right.
I mean, that's just the way I feel.
Yes, because I've heard reports of younger people in little catchments of Dublin, striving to learn the language and seeing, the use of it, having the passion for it, but also actually feeling it's cool, which I think always helps. Yet, arguably, in our own back door, though there's not necessarily a hierarchy of Gaeltachts, you're not seeing that as much locally.
Well, just to give you an example of when I realised this. Now, Ranafast would be one of the we'll say, most Gaeltacht townlands. And one day I was out working and I heard a crowd of children going down to the shore and they were shouting in Irish. And I said to myself, there must be strangers. And then I realised, why do I know when they're talking Irish that they're strangers?
Yeah.
And actually they were from County Down.
Wow.
But it made me realise, all right, so we don't hear the locals going down. So sometimes we pretend that everything's fine, but it's not.
So what do we do about that? I mean, you can't figure this out now, but if you look at the amount of sort of, you know, passes for not doing Irish that are being issued, 60-odd thousand, I think it was. Now, I'm pulling that figure out of the top of my head, but there certainly is. I mean, we have a responsibility as grown-ups. We can't say you're a young person, you must do, you know, we expect you to do this yourselves. There's something we're missing along the way as the big boys in the room and the big girls.
There is something definitely, and I cannot put my finger on it.
Yeah.
It took me a good while to figure out why this is happening, and why are Gaeltacht children talking in English? And the reason is their parents are talking English to yeah. them, and that is the bottom line. And we can dress and cover everything else up, but that is the main problem. So. I think that kind of answers the question of why we're like this. What can we do about it? I get the parents to change their attitude.
Yeah, exactly. And Gaelscoil have never been more popular, but the parents still can't speak Irish in many cases. And I'm talking maybe more so outside the Gaeltacht.
Outside the Gaeltacht, the Gaelscoil have thrived. They're very, very popular. They're doing huge, huge work. Just an example of how things are thriving, and maybe it's not a fair example, but the like of the FLA in Belfast there a few weeks ago, it was absolutely lovely to be there.
Mm.
Forget the music for a second, mm-hmm. which was absolutely great, but just the amount of people talking Irish and being proud of it. And it was an eye-opener.
Yeah. Just a question on that. I don't want to get too deep, but I've long been of the view that, and I'm not sure if it's a hangover from our former landlords, let me put it to you like that, but we struggle to, I think, still have pride in our culture, in that we feel that if we elevate our culture, our music, our language, that in some way we're putting down other cultures. And I think that's a circle we haven't squared yet. And as I say, I think maybe we're apologetic or we're shy or whatever it might be. But there's something there, I think, that we need to figure out before it's all gone. Do you have any view in relation to that?
Well, I'm not sure if it's just culture alone. I'm not sure if it's other people's culture that we're afraid of. I think we are, yes, sometimes afraid of our own culture. Now, I have often heard this line, which is I haven't heard it in years.
Yeah.
But when I was young, in towns, the surrounding area, you'd get somebody saying, when we'd be talking in Asgailge, what are you doing talking that donkey language?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And you had people saying, you'll never get anything talking. You know, you need that was a huge problem.
And that lands, you feel that, you get the sense that.
Yeah.
I get you. Okay. Well, we need to move past that for sure. What was life like in Ranafastra as a growing up? Because it's a part of the world I absolutely adore.
It was lovely. I must say, we were, like, I'm fortunate enough to have grown up when Ranafastra was Ranafastra. We had everybody knew each other. We had, every evening there was a football game. We played soccer, as it happened. And then, of course, you would have, for 10 months of the year, life was great. And then for 2 months of the year, we'd have the Irish students coming, and then life was fantastic. And it was those 2 months were just, I think we had something that a lot of other townlands didn't have. We had, you know, the college, the Cayleys, an influx of 500 to 600 students coming each month.
Mm.
And making friends, and of course, when they would go away, then they would return home, and letters would be coming for a while, and we'd be writing letters. And the day they would leave would be the longest day of the year for us. It was, well, that weekend, we were in shock, really. So.
And as a young one, you know, you're like a sponge, you're soaking up all this music, all this culture, and then these different perspectives coming in for a couple of months, how couldn't you end up being so passionate about music and the arts and your language?
Yes, well, as I said, it was an experience that a lot of other people didn't get and probably don't understand. But even general life in Ranafast at the time was absolutely great. You know, you would go out in the morning, and that would be you until you got hungry. Yeah. You came in for dinner, and as soon as the last bite was eaten, you were gone again.
So true. And I remember it so well, too. It was the exact same down in Lahia, you know, with Merver and the sea and the rivers and the forests and the hills. The one, if someone asks me now as an older person to sum up my childhood, it's freedom. Yeah. And it's a freedom that I can't give my boys. Or I should be able to, but I feel I can't.
Well, actually, we're kind of lucky enough. I think we still have quite a lot of freedom.
Right.
I'm talking about my grandkids now. They would be, yeah, I think they're reasonably lucky, and they're, but we had total freedom. Mm. And
another thing I didn't have was fear, and I don't mean I was fearless, but I had I felt an innocent freedom, if you know what I mean. I didn't know what was going on in the news per se. I didn't fear something was going to happen to me, a bad person was going to take me away. Obviously, I was educated and I had my wherewithals, don't get me wrong, but there's just this awareness of this is awareness kids have now that I prefer if they didn't have it.
Well, I think in general, like the whole world has gone PC, we'll say, especially TV ways, but that time PC didn't exist, political correctness. If you fell out with someone, it was you sorted it out.
Yeah. And if I can add to this, we're not talking about being able to go and call people a slur or insult someone or weight shame them. This is actually just the way that overreach has creeped into just general life.
Well, I know when we started fighting, you know, fight would start years ago. There was one particular fella that would just, you know, when the fight would start, he would shout out, "Leave Neil McCowarkey to me."
There was some shovels you have on you. Did you ever box?
No, I didn't. Not
in a ring,
no,
anyway.
Not really. Okay. No, I had no interest.
I think that was a wasted opportunity. You've got some shovels on you. Your love of or interest in drama started, it feels very young, 13 or 14. Is that perceived as young? Or for me, it does.
Well, we didn't have, how would I put it? It's when I saw the first play on stage.
Yes.
I think it was about 13. And that's when I realised, listen, this is something new. This is absolutely, now I had seen pantomimes in Gidor, but I think I was too young. But I saw the first play. I said, I want to do this, and I want to be able to do this. Now, it is a slow process. You just don't go up on stage.
No, of course not. Yeah.
And it doesn't happen. But I had an interest, and maybe when I was 14, 15, I think a drama group was set up in Ranafast. And they were, at that time, they were doing three-act plays. And I eventually got a little part in it when somebody left the play and got sick, whatever it was. I got his part.
But you took the opportunity.
I took the opportunity. Well, I wanted to anyway.
Yes, of course.
But I remember the first night we went on stage. I was doing it perfect up until the night we went on stage.
Right.
And one of the things I had to do was a phone call, you know, and, you know, talking to someone. And I was so excited, I didn't give the person at the other end of the phone the chance to answer. And I just
ran through the lines.
And afterwards, somebody said it to me. And, oh, yeah. But I had an interest in it. I remember when I was, I don't know what age I was, maybe 17, I went to Dublin. I got the bus from probably Anagra to Letterkenny, and then we got a bus to Dublin just to go up to see Marcel Marceau in the Olympia Theatre, I think he was. And it was a long journey to go up there and do it. And then
did you travel alone? Or?
I did, yeah.
Really?
I did, yeah.
Wow.
And then I went, I, I, I drama course was in Kerry, in Ballinskellig's, Dungagan, and I've applied for that and got it, and it was a two-week course in August. Now, I think I was working at the time, so it might have been 19, but I hitched to Ballinskellig from Ranafarsh. It took me 3 days. Well, the first, I went to Donegal Town the first day just to have a good start, and 3 days in total to hitch down. I drove in, or I got a lift into Ballinskellig's from, is it Waterville or somewhere, on the back, on the link bucket on a tractor.
Unbelievable.
So,
and what was the family's view of all of this? And this is kind of a recurring feature. I just, you know, I mean, mums and dads, where's the money? Where's the career? Where's the progression? Where's the base? What was the...
Well, to answer that question, when you said what was the family's view of this, I didn't really talk a lot, maybe,
yeah,
to my parents. And when I was going to Kerry for 2 weeks, as I was going out the door with my bag, like if somebody did it to me today, they wouldn't get out the door. But I just said, I'm away for 2 weeks. I'm going to Kerry to a drama course.
Wow.
And that was it, out the door.
And what was, and is that was just your personality?
That was, yeah. I just, probably, you know, totally wrong.
Okay.
Totally wrong. But, you know.
I don't think it's necessarily wrong because I presume people know the type of you. It was not a character, right? So, he's off on a journey. He'll be back when he's back. Maybe that was the...
Well, I heard later my mother wasn't pleased.
Right, okay. You got the inside track. But I was chatting to, not so long ago, for a podcast, Raidney Mooney, and I sort of incorrectly... Well, not incorrectly, but she was very quick to correct me in that I just thought that Donegal... that it would have been a tough time to sort of grow as an artist. And she very quickly says to me, no, back when I was young, we were very advanced. We knew all this. We knew all that. There was a lot of culture. There was a lot of atmosphere. You know, you were just soaking it up and driving it on. Were you caught up in that wave?
Well, you see, I think drama might have been a little bit different. We still had an awful lot of drama in like Asgailge in the area. You had Aistir Uí Dóir. We had, I was part of Aistir Uí Na Farsta. Then I went into the factory in Anagra, and we set up a new group there, Aistir Uí Na Grúc. And we were always doing some, and as it happened, I started writing sketches that time and drama. But then the factories were at the time was huge. Udras na Gaeltachta started this competition between different factories all over the country, the Western, the Gaeltacht, and there would be competitions, and they were huge. And there were, you know, there'd be a night in Gidor where you'd have drama from Kerry, Cork, Galway up, and there'd be a 3 day festival. And there was quite a lot. Maybe that if you travelled 20 miles away, that you wouldn't get to have any of that.
Mm.
So we had, I suppose we were lucky in that little spark was kept alive.
Yes.
And it was only, we still kept doing it until, well, 1989, actually, I applied for a producer-director course. And the Udras again had seen that time that maybe Television Gaelic it would happen. It took another 7 years for it to happen, but they were trying to have people prepared for it.
Okay.
And it was great. It was the vision they had, I must say, was
the forward planning.
Yes.
Brilliant.
That there were people trained. Now, we did the course. It was a brilliant course, 6 months course. And then we got 6 programmes to do for Network 2, and we were nearly given a free rein to do those programmes.
Wow.
And they caused a little bit of a stir at the
Why
time.
Is that? Edgy?
Well, actually, it was the first time we took sex into the Irish language. Mm-hmm. And,
Who's this now? So what age are you at this point? Because you've been down to Dublin, you've been down to Kerry, so you're back up home now, are you?
Yes, I was home I would have worked at home just doing it for, well, 67, 77. I would have been mid-30s, yeah.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
And was it a conscious decision? Take a drink of your coffee. We're very chilled out here. Was it a conscious decision for to bring sex into it? It's edgy, like.
It was our way of, I suppose, doing it. We had to, we were told to, well, we decided to, I think there were three of us directing.
Mm.
And we had kind of a free rein. We wanted to do the last 10 minutes of the programme, that would be, or the first 10 minutes of the programme, it would be the comic history of Ireland.
Okay.
You know, the history of Ireland, but totally different. Just for example, Dermot and Grainne, and, you know, that story. And one of the shots we had in it was how Finn McCool knew where Dermot and Grainne slept the night before, you know, the labby Dermot and Grainne, because he'd find a condom wrapper beside it.
Ooh, edgy. Okay.
So things like that.
I thought it was Gay Byrne made all the changes in this country.
Little things like
but
that.
But still too, and I know from doing some interviews with people working in the arts and especially in the Irish language space, you know, whether this frames it correctly or not, they're still often the ones pushing the boundaries a little bit, trying to reflect, you know, popular culture. And I think it has to be done not just for the sake of it either, but you still do see some of the more edgy stuff as Gaelga.
Yeah, I think, well, for example, in poetry years ago, you were allowed to say anything as Gaelga for some reason or other. They wouldn't, you know, some of the old Irish poetry is quite rough, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, maybe we, well, we certainly didn't get away with it. We were crucified for it.
Mm.
And when the programme started going out, the only great thing was that Desert Storm had happened at the same time.
Yes.
So very few people were watching.
just backtracking a little bit, because when you turned over into the professional ranks, it wasn't actually on stage.
No, it wasn't on stage.
So was that just you wanting to look? I want to be on this in this space, and I'll do whatever it takes to be there.
I wanted to be there, and at the time you had to do, and we did everything and anything. There was no, that course we had was absolutely brilliant,
yeah.
Because you nearly got a week of trying everything. You know, you could do camera 1 week, you could do sound the next, you could be on lighting, you could be on anything, writing. There were two or three of us that were kind of interested in writing. So we got the hard jobs, we'll say, to when we were doing our own stuff, we had to write it as well. So it was a great experience and totally.
And do you think that makes you a better actor, more rounded, when you have an understanding of the other elements of producing a stage show or a TV show?
It probably does when you're starting off the first thing you have to understand is, what did they say? Actors get paid to sit around and wait. Yeah, somebody said that. And there's an awful lot of that. And sometimes people don't understand that. But yeah, we got the sense of it. When somebody has a problem with sound, the fact that you did sound, you know, there's no point in taking the shot if the sound isn't right. So you are more patient,
yeah.
Maybe. As for the acting, every day you're out, you are learning. And anybody that thinks otherwise is wrong. You're learning. I think the day we stop learning is the day maybe we should give it up.
Yeah, and I think the day you think you stop learning or you've learned everything is the day you should give it up too.
Yes.
If the truth be told. Yes. When you're speaking to me now in this conversation or speaking to someone in English, are you translating on the fly?
Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Well,
that's one thing about speaking to someone who, especially like, you know, Irish is the first language. It's remarkable that, sorry to bring this up sort of ad hoc in the middle of it all, but you're actively thinking. Translating it and then producing it in English.
Yes,
so I think that's fantastic.
Thank you. I suppose it puts us that extra step, maybe that we've an advantage. I think that's an advantage, and it should maybe should be used to learn other languages, yeah, which we haven't done, but would
brilliant.
Love
anyway,
to do.
So at what point then did Ross Laroon come into the equation?
Well, when TG Cahir started in, we'll say in 96, there'll be 30 years now. When they started, I was doing a year or two before that, I did a pilot program called See You Burn, mm-hmm, and it was about a comedy about undertakers. So they commissioned.
Hold on a second. Eh? Sorry. See You Burn. Was that the name of the undertakers?
It was. Well, they opened a crematorium, so it was See You Burn.
Okay, yeah. Right. Okay. Sorry, he caught me on the hop there. Go on.
All right.
So I had was this, that ever made? That's
it was,
all I want
yeah,
to know.
It was.
Right. Okay.
And it was very successful when TG Cahir started. Yeah. So we have actually I'm thinking of doing the follow up to it now. I'm going to have See You Burn and Son. They're going to be the first solar powered crematorium in the world. But that series worked. And we kept with writing comedy. So myself and Shane McGinley, God rest him, the two of us were writing comedy here. We did See You Burn, Lee na Gréine, FFC, Glan Caw. We did four. Well, I left halfway, after the beginning of FFC. So we had done maybe 40 or 50 half-hour programmes of comedy. And with the last series, I was really finding it difficult and it was not a pleasure.
Why?
Anymore. Lots of difficulties in, how will I put it? We had 12 programmes to do on a certain comedy. And it wasn't a pleasure anymore. Things were.
Was it artistic differences, time pressures?
It was.
Are you trying to be careful with your language here, or have you not figured it out?
I have figured it out.
Okay,
I'm trying to be
diplomatic.
Diplomatic. Okay. We had problems. So yeah, after six programs was done, myself and Shane decided, right, life. There's more to life than this.
Yeah. Wasn't so, a pleasure any longer.
So yeah, we left the other six program. We didn't do them. So I was down editing, and I met the series producer of Ross na Ruin. And if he had asked me a couple of months beforehand, I would have known. I wanted to keep doing what I was doing, but I was so, we'll say, fed up. And he asked me, "Would I go into Ross na Ruin?" And I said, "Yeah, probably would like to give it a try." So it was going to be for 5 weeks, and but when the contract came out, there was 15 weeks in it, and I said, "Right, there's no difference between 5 weeks and 15; it would be the same." And when the 15 weeks were up, I thought that was it. So, but just I saw the scripts coming out for the following
You're
2 weeks,
still in there.
And I was there, and I said, "Listen, hold on, I'm finished." Well, we always give more weeks than your contract, and at the end of the season, I was asked, "Would you want to come back next year?" I said yes, because I had got used to just acting. Like when we were doing it ourselves, we were doing everything.
But the regular income must have been attractive as well.
It would. Well, we were not too bad the way
okay,
we were,
right,
you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, okay.
Because, you know, the irregular income was before that, before we started.
I guess you understood,
yeah,
right? So there's a bit of stability there.
Yeah. But if we were, you know, if we were to lift your cup and leave it down again, and, you know, then they went to, you were going for another scene, somebody would make sure the cup is in exactly the right place.
Yeah.
Continuity. Mm. If you were to move a chair or a table, up until then, we would do it ourselves.
Yeah.
But now, all of a sudden, everything was handed to you. Mm. And I thought, life is very easy here.
But before I pick up from that, just back into your sort of creativity and how your writing relationship ended. Did it put you off writing for a bit in, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the Ross Noorin opportunity came in at the right time. Like, did it sicken you?
Actually, no, it didn't. Okay. I still wanted to write, and writing is still important to me. At the moment, I am writing a little sketch. It's for the night at the Oscars, or the Banks Goes to Hollywood, one of these, you know, fundraisers for the local football club. But they want to know what sketch I'm doing. When it was announced a week ago, I said I was writing an Irish version of 50 Shades of Grey. And not everybody believed me. And of course, I can say today that it's not true.
Well, I was at one of those Oscars down for Neve Breach, those Oscar nights, and they're fantastic. And I'll tell you one thing, there was a couple of them were pretty saucy, so nothing would surprise me.
I think, I didn't advertise the auditions, but there was very little uptake. in general.
I can imagine. No, and listen, I meant when I asked about the hiatus from writing, whether it was short-lived at that time,
no,
because you've been prolific throughout your career alongside Ross Noorin. It's just sometimes when you have a bad experience, you want to step back and go.
No, I still love writing, although it is very, very hard. It is, writing is actually the hardest part.
Mm.
And if you have a day, writing for a day, if you're writing, and we used to spend quite a good lot of days writing, but you would be more tired in the evening than you would be if you were out on a 12-day shoot, mm-hmm. a very hard day. Writing takes a lot more out of you.
Mm.
You will be totally drained, especially if things are not going well. And myself and Shen were actually very, very, how would I say, on the exact same wavelength.
Yeah, yeah.
And somebody would start off the, you know, conversation, what are we going to do here, right? And then we'd come to a block of some sort, and we'd be sitting there maybe for 2 hours, and nobody could get round this block. And then we'd decide, right, we'll go home. And on the way home, either I would ring him or he would ring me with the solution. So it was just take a break and
you'd find a way. So the 5 weeks became 15, and the 15 become season two, and then this is John Joe Daly's emergence into popular culture. What was it like in those early years going into the second season, and what level of certainty do you have going forward? Because the character's been on our screens for over two decades now. But
you don't have any.
Really?
The bottom line is you don't have any. At the end of every season, you're asked, well, you may be asked, do you want to come back? And that still goes on.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, I would think to myself, geez, what's going to happen now if I'm not back, asked back next year?
Yes.
And eventually I got kind of, we'll say, maybe used to it. And I would be thinking, right, if I'm not asked back, I have other things I can do. So it got to the stage where, this last 3 years, I should have been retired 3 years ago, but I still enjoy it.
Of course,
I have no intention of it. It's when I can't just sit into the car and drive to Galway. Maybe that would.
Well, now you're in fantastic shape. Although I should have learned from doing my program that what you see is not necessarily always what it is. But I mean it as a compliment. But it sounds to me like, you know, you were fully in control. This is fantastic as long as he keeps going. If not, well, that means I can do this. So you're never beholden to
You have to have a plan B.
Yeah.
You have to be, you know, some people actually, quite a lot of people now that I'm just looking at the cast of Ross Noorin that are doing well, can do more than just acting. They may do puppeteering or presenting or other things. Mm-hmm. And some of those are actually very busy.
Mm.
And sometimes the 6 months I would have off, there are years when, and it's like always, it's feast and famine. And there are years when you're flat out, and there are other years, like this year now, I did nothing. Well, very little, very little. I'm always working on scripts.
Of course,
Just
in relation to, now, you know, you've got loads of credits whilst you've been working in Ross and the Rune, by the way. I acknowledge that. But when you're so associated with a character for so long, are you in danger of losing out in other opportunities? And is that a conscious decision that you have to make?
Yeah, you're totally. And I'm coming from the other side where I was actually casting people.
Yeah.
And if they were in a soap for so long, you wouldn't touch them with a barge pole, usually.
Yeah.
Yes, that is true. And I understand it. For me, I was kind of. Right, I did the figures. Not that I was very good at figures, but I was saying, right, I have 6 months here. Very few actors in the country have 6 months of continuous employment.
Employment, yeah.
And if for the 6 months I'm off, I'll do whatever. Physical work, labour.
Yes, but you know there's been huge productions in this country over the years. I'm not sure if you ever threw your hat into the ring, you know, big films and big dramas. And as I say, this is not to take away from what you have done, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But, you know, sometimes, I'll tell you the way I look at it is, sometimes there's, say, for instance, we'll use a British soap opera, Coronation Street, and there's a young actor, and they're really, really popular, and then they quit. And you go, why would you do that?
Yeah.
Well, if they do another 5 years,
they will not.
They will never make it in Hollywood or whatever, or it'd be very difficult. So they have to take that gamble. And often it's a gamble that doesn't pay off, if the truth be told.
Yes, but if you stay too long in the soap, you will not get anything else. Now, you're talking about big productions. I think Cray was one of the biggest productions in this area. Now, they've just finished Cray Adore. And I was in Cray. I was very, very fortunate to have a great part in Cray.
What was that experience like? Because it was an astonishing piece of work.
When I was talking about, you know, that every day you're learning, going out with Philip Doherty, being there, he was directing. This was more film rather than TV series, and that was his attitude. I learned more in the, 5 or 6 weeks I was with him. I'd say I hadn't learned an awful lot.
Mm. What did you learn? I'm saying this actually even just to aspiring actors, or in fact, a lot of this advice can work in any area of work. Just, you know.
I'll give you a very simple example.
Please, yeah.
Actors on soap are, like, it's lines.
Yeah.
Once I finish my line, you start.
Yeah.
That's what it is. That's how it works. It's a factory. Let's churn it out.
Yes.
With drama, with Cray, no. Think.
Mm.
Let your mind take in what you're after saying. Don't answer right away. If it takes 5 seconds to answer, so be it.
And that silence says a lot too.
That can say far more than. It's only when you see the two that you actually realize it. Another one. This is a very simple one, but you know, don't be blinking your eyes. Keep your eyes open, if at all possible.
You've got me blinking now. Go on.
Yeah. Well, once you're conscious of it. Yeah.
But
if you're looking into the lens, or, you know, try not.
Don't want to break that eye contact with the audience.
Yes.
Is that it?
Yeah. Don't be. If you have to blink. Try and blink when somebody else is talking.
Yeah.
Or keep. They're just simple little things that maybe I never heard of.
Do you know that nuance of silence and pause? Maybe that could. Maybe, you know, that could be adopted more in soap operas. You know, there's this presumption that it's bash, 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 bash onto the next thing. Who's to say that, you know, it could work quite well in it?
To put it simply, I would say soap is more action, whereas. Maybe drama like that is reaction.
Mm.
So instead of having action, reaction can, and sometimes in soap you can't react because it's, you know, it's going to be cut anyway.
Yeah, indeed. But on Ross and the Rune, lines, learning lines, right? Because it's disposable, isn't it? There's a page. I know what I have to say. There's no need to retain that. That's gone. So what? How did you work? Or how do you work that out? Or how do you do it?
Well, for a start, I was very lucky that I have a great memory and I can learn lines. Now, I never take scripts home. They're in the green room. I never take them home. The only people you see learning lines in Ross na Ruin are people that are not fluent in Irish.
Yeah.
The ones who learned the language, they have to learn their lines and they go around learning lines. Native Irish speakers usually don't. Now, very rarely will you get more than 3 or 4 pages in a scene. And if I read it twice, I would know it. I've been
You're
lucky.
Blessed with it, yeah.
I am, yes.
It's a talent.
But, like, okay, my relations will say we're storytellers.
Yeah, yeah.
So to be able to tell a story, you have to have a good memory. I had that, so I didn't. Don't worry.
The way
worry
I remember that line. The way I remember that line is to tell a lie. You have to good memory.
I know that too.
It just goes through how we were raised different, right?
I know that one too. I sometimes do tours and run a fast, and I'm asking myself, okay, right, what did I say? That if there's somebody here that was here before, yeah. But I think learning lines is quite simple. It's learning what's in between the lines.
Yes.
That what was the thought? What did the writer want to put across here? And in soap you don't have as much of that. Now I was hoping to be in Cré a Dó when it started, but I believe I heard it. I wasn't in it for different reasons. A bit of lead being one of them.
What does that mean? Oh, death. Right. Okay. Sorry.
But I heard that the second series actually better than the first. Yeah. Now, I did try and tell them that my character Ray had a twin brother in England and that he was coming home to avenge his brother's killing. But no,
they didn't buy that, did they? No. I think that's in the fantasy realm.
Yeah.
Film. What's it like on a film set, though? Because you've featured a number of feature films as well.
It's funny when I was doing, as I said, Feast and Famine.
Yeah.
When I was doing Cré, the day I finished, or even the day before I finished, I was between the two. There was a film being shot up in Glenarm in Antrim, Aintis. It was so different, we'll say. I went from Gidor, where we were doing 12, 13 scenes a day, and I went up to, and I was given the schedule for the week, and I was in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I saw a scene, we'll say scene 13, Monday, Tuesday, scene 13, Wednesday, scene 14, and Thursday, scene 14. I said, right, what's wrong? We're hoping to do half the scene today and the other half, we'll say Monday, and the other half on Tuesday. And the same with Wednesday and Thursday. I said, God, what? Where are we? And now it was a difficult enough scene.
But did you find it difficult to switch gears, sort of from that rat-a-tat-tat to...
Not really, because the exact same thing applied. Listen, take your time.
Yeah.
There is no hurry.
Yeah.
Look at, just think about it.
And be in the moment of what a pleasure it is, what an honour it is too, to be around these great people,
It was. Carrie Crowley was in that, and she was very, well, she had been, I knew her from Ross na Ruin. She had been in Ross na Ruin. I don't usually, you know, as Gaelge, if you're acting as Gaelge, you don't usually get to travel much, you know. You might get to Galway, Cork, Kerry, something like that. But one time I got a great opportunity, 2007, when I went for the audition, it was old Irish, totally 400 years ago, and I found it difficult enough to read. Actually, some of it I couldn't read, but I did the audition anyway. On the way home, it was in Dublin, I got on the way home, maybe in Monaghan, I got a phone call. Do you have a passport? I said, I do. Right, that's fine. We'll need that. You have the part. And we'll be following the Flight of the Earls.
Oh, wow.
From Rathmullen out to...
Spain,
out to Invelg, Belgium.
Right.
And then across Europe, ending up in Rome. And I got to travel the exact same route from Rathmullen they left, wasn't it?
That was prior then to the big celebration recently. I can't remember the there was anyway massive flight of the Earls thing. But the French film you were in as well, that's around the same time. So you this passport was getting a hammering, wasn't it? Or was that recorded in Ireland?
That was recorded in Ireland. I somebody rang me one day, would you go in for an audition? And I don't even know who it was, but I tried the audition and it was a French film. I know the translation was 2 days to die or something like that.
De jours à tour.
Well, I think that's what it means.
I think it might be love me no more, you know. That's
somebody,
what
somebody, anyway, I got the part. It was out in Linan or... Right. I read about Linan somewhere. Yeah. Yes. And it was about I think he was a famous French actor now. And he had discovered that he was diagnosed with cancer and he didn't want his family to, how would I put it, to feel sorry for him or something. Mm. And he wanted them to make it easier in the family. He kind of fell out with them and.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he came to Ireland with 2 days to. And he discovered that there was actually that he did the wrong thing. But
wow.
Anyway, I think the
do
end.
You know, I love how what a lovely actual hook for a story that you just threw out there from a film you did in 2008.
Just to give you an example of something that you're learning every day. At the end, the last scene was him walking out into the sea, and he wasn't prepared to do it himself. Didn't want to do it himself. He wanted a stand-in, and there was an audition. For backsides, whose backside would that he actually had the choice
he had
of picking?
Picked
yeah,
the bum,
yeah.
Right?
And he picked the bum that actually went out.
Was
to
it yours?
No, it wasn't. No, no.
I'm like, you know, when I listen to podcasts or something like this, like if I'm listening at home now, I've paused it and I'm searching this film, not because of the bum, by the way. I was going to say this before you mentioned the bum, but I'd pause it and then I would. You know, that's just the way I am. That's the great thing about podcasts. You can do that. This is a question that sounds terrible because it's almost as if it's doing you a disservice, which it's not. You've contributed so much through your writing, through your acting, on stage, on film. Your career is astonishing. But I must ask, and this is not to denigrate that, did you make a choice to act in Irish, to act at home? You're obviously an incredible actor. Did you try and move to a stage show in London or New York or ever have any ambition or did you make a conscious choice?
Well, thanks for the compliment, but no, I didn't make that choice. Some people do. I didn't really plan ahead. Things were happening. I don't have a CV.
Yeah.
Well,
you kind of do. It's just on paper.
Yeah,
right?
But when somebody asks for you to send in a showreel or a CV, I just don't have it. I didn't plan ahead. Yeah. I didn't want to. Actually, I did a few things in English. Public Hum will say Welsh soap. I had a couple of days in that.
Yeah.
And I found it hard.
Okay.
Found it hard to be. Now, I would say it would a few days you would get over it and you'd manage, but I wasn't comfortable.
Yeah. Like, I'm not in any way equating what you do and what I have done, but back in the day when I was much younger, there would have been people say, you know, did you apply here or did you apply there? I actually have always been incredibly content in what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And never felt that I needed to do this, that, or that, or proved. I'd have been practical. I'd have thought, well, if I apply for a job in Dublin, what's the rent going to be? And am I doing it for my ego? Am I doing it for the security of my family? I'm not saying you put that thought into it, but it's just sometimes you can be very content with your lot and realize that you're lucky in what you've had. That would be my attitude, to be honest with you.
I'm not that far away from that. It was just happening. And I would have been happy enough I was happy enough when we were doing our own stuff here. And really, I think maybe I should have carried on with that. But I took the easy life. I took the easy way out. and still do.
Yes, but you're still writing, and that never leaves you, does it? I mean, is there a and this is not actually to do anything with either your or my age, but is there still a project that's burning that needs to get out? Be it a book or a play or something.
Well, yeah, I have enough little stories written to publish. All right, someday, as I said,
would
someday.
You intertwine these stories into sort of an autobiography or release them as standalone?
No, standalone.
I'm trying to get some.
Definitely
trying to get some
dirt on me. No,
no, not dirt on you. Some ideas commissioned, but okay, that's fine. You're like me. You love the sea.
I love the sea.
You've got a blue and white boat.
I do.
I've got a blue and white boat.
How do you know that, by the way?
Great researchers.
Yeah, I have somewhere.
So where do you sail out of?
Oh, that's actually where I'm going now.
I won't hold you. Yes. That's where I'm going. I'm going out of Downing's. What, you're at a Burton Port?
No, I ran a fast. To Gola for the day,
okay,
I hope.
Lovely.
A blue and white boat, yes. You know,
an Orkney, is it?
No. I think she's a bass boat. She's only 16 foot.
That's outboard perfect
engine,
size.
Yeah. But when you know, she's blue and white, and when COVID came and you know the restrictions, we weren't allowed to go out to the islands. You weren't allowed to go two kilometers. Yeah. I got the boat serviced and repainted and everything. She's looking grand. I took her down the channel for a run one day and. Next thing I heard the noise. I said, oh my God, the engine's just been serviced. And I turned it down, the noise didn't go away. And then I looked up. There was this helicopter, blue and white, Garda, sitting right above me. I could see the camera, just, it was like the umbilical belly button, we'll say. And I was looking straight into the camera. Now, they didn't send me the photographs, but they must have been great.
I was down in Burton Port yesterday, just visiting a person who lives next to Bajaji, and he has these paintings and pictures and absolutely beautiful stuff. You do a bit of etching, sketching as well.
Not no? really, no, I don't.
Not even for fun. Come on, you've got the boat,
but you know,
you're not right. You're not doing the front cover of your book.
Do you know something? There are things I don't sing either, and I know myself. I can't sing, and there's some people would say that'd be a first for you.
Great sense of self awareness.
But I
and do you fish or just love being out on the
boat? I love being out on the boat. Yeah. I love actually. It takes about nearly an hour to go to Gola, and that hour I'm just sitting there, looking. We have it's one of the nicest journeys you could do, and up the channel is the same way. You know, just my son now would have been he travelled quite a lot. He's out in Dubai, but he would go to the Philippines, Vietnam. He always said that Vietnam, Cambodia was the nicest place he's ever been. And when I was taking him up the channel one night and coming back down, I said, "Is there anything like Vietnam or Cambodia?" I said, "Yeah, it's just as nice, maybe even a little nicer."
I think so. I think we live. And my trip at the weekend was testimony to that. We live in the, I mean, I went from standing next to Bad Eddie and all of that to the foot of the Mount Errigal to a petting zoo, petting the head of a llama or whatever they're called. And I'm thinking, you know, where else could you do this with these views? Like
just coming out today, there was about 50 cars at the bottom of Errigal. And now, only I think this is something that I have to say. The new path up Errigal to me is the most important thing that was done in Donegal in the last 50 years.
Really?
Yes.
That's amazing.
I used to climb Errigal every week.
Yes.
Before the path was made, I would go up, I would climb it, and I was timing myself, and I was, you know, really fit that time. As you can see, I'm not now. But
you're looking great. Go on.
The
stop
new
fishing
path,
for compliments. Would you?
The
get
new
on?
Path is like for years I've been crying out. You know, this is you'd get tourists coming out, Japanese especially coming out, walking 10 steps, going down to their two knees in muck.
Yeah.
And the fact that this road, it is. Like we've had politicians thinking about it and not dreaming about it, wondering how not to do it. But all of a sudden, about 4 or 5 years ago now, I think it started during COVID, yes. But a local group, I would take
they
it.
They are, yeah. I've spoken to them, amazing people.
They
yeah.
have done more for Donegal than any of the other politicians.
Now what we need is the council to do that. What would be the second most amazing thing? A bigger car park.
A car park, yeah. Okay. And you go down to, listen, if you go down to Croagh Frederick, there's acres of places to park.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if you were to design an underground car park there, it wouldn't be that difficult.
Whatever it would take. When's what's the airing schedule now for Rosneroon? Are we in the hiatus at the moment before the new season kicks off?
I think it's starting 15th of September, as far as I know. We started 2 weeks ago.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, we started 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks working and then I have a week off. Mm. So... How could you?
Right, listen, you need to get on your boat. I'm only joking. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on. And it's remarkable, actually, didn't mention it. It's relatively recent that you started voice acting. You got this beautiful voice.
Thank you. You've
only started employing that in acting work very recently.
Well, I've done a good few voiceovers on programmes.
Right, okay, yeah.
And
but acting?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I think I'm going to... supposed to be going out to... Belfast tomorrow to read something. I don't know. It's like everything, they don't let you know until the very last minute. Maybe tonight they'll send word. I'm still waiting.
All right. Listen, well, continued success with everything you do. It's been wonderful chatting to you, and thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you for your time.